You're listening to the Brown Girl Podcast, a new show discussing various cultural and mainstream topics that impact our community from the perspectives of South Asian women. The show also aims to highlight South Asian women creators, business owners, and pioneers who are paving the way for future generations. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever your podcasts are found. If you're on Instagram, give us a follow at thebrowngirl_podcast to stay up to date on new releases and stay engaged with our community. Thanks for tuning in. Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Brown Girl Podcast today. My name is Julie. I'm the host of the show. And today we are talking about interracial relationships. So for those of us who grew up in South Asian backgrounds as first-gen children of immigrants, most of our parents have pretty culturally conservative ways of thinking. And when it comes to marriage and picking a marriage partner, they want us to marry within our culture. And so if you're choosing to marry outside that, especially if you're the first to do so in your family, it can create a lot of noise and uproar and sometimes a lot of backlash, and there's just a lot more challenges and hurdles to have to work through initially. So our guest for today is Disha Mistry Mazeppa, and she's going to talk to us exactly about that and share with us her firsthand experience of dating and eventually marrying someone outside her South Asian culture. Disha is also the host of the podcast But What Will People Say, which is a South Asian interracial relationship and lifestyle podcast aimed at destigmatizing cultural norms and providing a support system for South Asian women to fight for autonomy over their lives. I hope you guys enjoy today's episode. Hi, Disha. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So let's start from the beginning. Tell us your story and how you met your now husband, Mike.
So I met my husband, Mike. It's going to be 7 years this year, actually in a few weeks. We met on Tinder, and that was when Tinder was your only option. There weren't Hinge and Bumble. They hadn't really come out yet. So we met on Tinder, and I don't think either of us were really looking for anything specific. I was really young. I was 22 when I met him. And so, we went out on a coffee date and, it was fun. I really liked him. And so we were kind of going out for a while, and then we ended up dating, becoming exclusive, doing the whole thing. And then I guess we at some point things just naturally progressed to getting more and more serious. It wasn't a super thought out situation because we were both pretty young when we met. And so there wasn't this immediate pressure to figure out who this person is to me or what is all of this. Even when he was my boyfriend, I wasn't really thinking super long term for a while.
Yeah. What was your first impression of him?
Oh my God, I thought he was such a dork. I was who is this man? I don't know. Because I had no massive expectations, really, I was just I think he's attractive and he was really nice. And I think what really caught me off guard with him was he was just so upfront and honest. And if he said he was going to do something, he would do it. If he would always go out of his way to make plans. He never had excuses. He was always on time, which the bar seems so low when you're 22. But those were the things that stood out to me.
So just for context, so you were 22, and how old was he when you guys met?
I guess he was probably 25.
Okay. He's a couple years older than you. So what was your previous history of relationships? Did you date any Indian or South Asian guys before, or were you ever attracted to South Asian guys?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely was attracted to some of them. I had a boyfriend who was brown. I felt if I ever talked to them, they were very stereotypical. I live in New Jersey, so there's a very specific category of brown boys around here. They fall into either the kind of douchey variety, I joined an Indian frat and I think I'm a player and whatever, And then there were they had kind of just come from India, and culturally I felt I didn't have a lot in common with them. They were nice, but at the end of the day, they all wanted the same thing. It would just turn into I just want a nice Indian girl that checks all of these certain boxes. And I kind of hit a point where I was I don't want that. I was no matter who I date, no matter how quote-unquote whitewashed they might be, at the end of the day, they just want a nice Indian housewife who's going to make his parents happy. And I was like, not into that. And personal preference, like, I am very much attracted to men who look like my husband, who are kind of like lean soccer player, athletic build, kind of like tall white boys. Like, that was just the type.
Yeah.
And so I was never against dating outside of South Asian culture either.
Mm-hmm. And what was it like growing up for you? Like, did your parents, you know, what were their feelings and attitudes about dating? Like, did they let you date or have a boyfriend growing up?
They, you know, when I was younger, they were pretty like, whatever. Like, I had guy friends, like, they come over. But as I got older, it just, they became more and more conservative the older I became. And the rules started getting tighter and the restrictions started adding up. And I was a very kind of like angry teenager as it was. And I very much struggled to live at home with very conservative, very controlling parents, essentially. So there was no dating. There's no talking about boys. There's no mention of a boyfriend or anything. And then one day after I graduated with my master's, it was like, okay, so like now we have to get you married. They're like, do you have a boyfriend? I'm like, so you basically went my whole life saying, don't talk to boys, don't interact with boys, don't mention boys. Do you have a boyfriend?
Right.
I was like, okay. Like, where is the bridge here?
Yeah. Raise your hand if your brown parents allowed you to date growing up. There's like zero of us. So did your parents ever express to you, though, like how they or whether they wanted you to marry within the culture?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, they tried to bring, you know, the bio datas with the little folders with all the little three sentences that you get about a boy and being like, he's a nice boy. He lives in Tennessee and he's a dentist and you're going to move there. And I'm like, why would I literally looked at my mom one time. I was like, why would I move to Tennessee? Like, what? Yeah. What makes you think I want to do that? And she was like, well, he lives there. I'm like, I don't know who this person is. And they already like, they go from like, don't ever talk to boys and trust them to like, yeah, you can just like meet the stranger that some extended family member brought to us and like move in with him, like, essentially.
So when you met Mike and during the course of the dating relationship, like, did you have that sinking feeling of, ugh, if this goes anywhere, I'm going to have to tell my parents and it's going to be a whole ordeal? Or were you like fully prepared for that?
I don't think anyone can be fully prepared for it. To some extent, in the back of my head, I knew I probably wasn't going to end up with a brown guy. Just knowing my dating history, predominantly did not date South Asian men. And so in my head, I was kind of like, well, I'm not going to introduce a boy to my parents until I'm like, this is the person I'm going to spend the rest of my life with. So I was like, I don't have to think about it until I find that person. Yeah. And I just happened to find that person at a very young age. But again, didn't really like talk about that for a couple years until it was like, okay, so like, this is real. Like, this is, you're my person. And then I was like, shit, now we have to go through this.
Right. So how long were you guys together before you got married?
We were together, I think, 3.5 to 4 years. So we got engaged about 3-ish years in, and then we got married.
So how did you tell your parents and how they react?
I kind of took the route of telling the most understanding parent, which is my mom. And I had kind of systematically introduced Michael as my friend. Like, I slowly would just like, I reached a point where I was like, if I want to live my life a certain way, if I want to do the things I want to do, I have to just like do it and like force them to get over it. So I stopped like phrasing things I did as questions. I wouldn't be like, oh, can I go out tonight with my friends? I would just be like, I'm going out with my friends tonight. And it was very like distinct switch that happened, and my parents noticed it and were like not thrilled, but they were like, well, she's not asking, like, what do you want? And so I would just be like, hey, my friend Mike is gonna come. And we had moved, and very conveniently my parents bought a house literally like 3 miles from Michael's house, and I was like, well, this worked out. But we were moving and I was like, hey, my friend's going to help us move because you guys need help moving all your furniture and stuff. So he had come to do that. And then he would like randomly pick me up to go do things. So I had him do that like 5 or 6 times and then kind of decided like, okay, this is the night I'm going to tell them. My cousins knew about him and I was like, I need you guys to come over. I need you to help me tell my mom and you're going to stay over just in case like shit hits the fan. And then the backup plan was if shit really, really hits the fan and my parents are like, get out of the house, like, you know, disownment status, that Mike would just, you know, show up waiting with the car and like pick me up and, you know. So I kind of prepared worst case scenario, but like hoped for the best.
So how did they react when you told them?
So I only told my mom and my cousins kind of blurted it out for me because I was just so scared to tell them. Like to this day, it might be one of like the scariest things I had to do because I like truly didn't know what was going to happen. And I didn't know how my mom was going to take it. And she took it surprisingly well. I think part of it was you're being somewhat cornered by like a group of 4 girls in our family. And just seeing like I was like sobbing, like I was like shaking. I like didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. So my cousins really like took the reins and did the talking. And she kind of was like, yeah, like I figured like he's the only boy you bring around. And I'm like, that's hilarious. You act like you ever let me bring boys around. Like, okay. But, you know, it was like the best case scenario. She took it pretty well. And then it was nighttime. So like everyone's kind of went to bed and didn't really discuss it too much. And then she like mulled it over at night and like went through all the worst case scenarios and then flipped out in the morning.
Really?
And then the plan, though, was we're not going to let you spend too much time building up this idea of who Michael is in your head. We're just going to force him on you. So literally the next day, Michael came over because I was like, I think the thing in my head was I'm like, you're just building up in your head who you think this man is, right? Like you are going to take every stereotype of white people, brown people have come up with, right? Like they all get divorced and they're all on drugs and they all like cheat on their wives or whatever, like all the stuff they've made up. And I was like, scarier than when you actually meet the person. So literally the next day I was like, Mike's going to come over. He's going to come say hi. You're going to talk to him. And then me and my cousins are going to go out with him because my cousins wanted to spend some time with him too. They hadn't gotten to actually meet him yet. And so that probably helped a little.
Yeah. What ethnicity is Mike?
I'm sorry?
What ethnicity is Mike?
So he is Ukrainian and Italian. His grandparents are both from those countries, but his parents grew up here, and he was born and raised here. So he's pretty American.
Mm-hmm. Did your parents like Mike?
As he likes to say, everybody likes Mike. Yeah, they did. They did. He kind of knew to some extent what he was getting into. And he is generally charming when he wants to be. So he kind of like schmoozed his way through it. And also like I made my mom like make him lunch because I was like, the way to my mom's heart is someone complimenting her food. Like all she wants to do is feed people. So I had Michael come over for lunch a few times and, you know, he like had some Indian food with my mom and like hung out with her. And so like to some extent was like on her good side and kind of like demonstrated that like he's not here to like screw around, and he would always get me home at a reasonable hour because he was just my boyfriend. Like we weren't engaged, we weren't any of it, and my parents did bring that up like repeatedly.
Yeah,
my dad didn't take it well at all. My dad, I think, for the longest time was like an absolute disaster about it, and my mom unfortunately had to put up with it. We just have a rocky relationship as it is. And if it were up to my dad, he probably would have disowned me. But I think having my mom as the buffer helped.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like our parents, you know, most of them will come around. Like, to use their own language against them, they will learn and figure out how to, quote, adjust. And things will be okay. But it will, you know, take some time for them to adapt and get comfortable with it. And I want to say that's the case majority of the time. I mean, I know and acknowledge that there are some really unfortunate cases and stories of people from our community being disowned because they married outside the culture. But I hope those are few and far between. And I do think we're going down the path where it's becoming, you know, more normalized, especially in our generation. Did you feel pressure from your family around a wedding or marriage timeline after telling your parents about him? Because, you know, brown parents don't really understand dating culture.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as soon as I kind of told them, it was like this constant repetitive cycle of, are you guys engaged? When are you getting married? When are you getting married? What do you mean you're dating? What's a boyfriend? I don't know what that means. And it was like, it was literally like a cycle. Like I would just hear the same questions over and over again. And so there was some of that pressure. I will say to some extent, maybe we did get married sooner just because of that. But I did tell Michael, like, I was like, if you think I'm your person, if this is it for you, then I will deal with my parents. I will tell them about you and I will put up with them, but I don't want you to feel like you have to propose because they're putting pressure on anyone. Like, you can do that on your timeline. You know, I don't care if it's 6 months, 6 years, like whatever you want to do. But I just need to know that, like, this is it for you. And that one day when you're ready, you'll propose. And he did end up proposing about like 6 or 7 months after I told my parents.
Yeah. I mean, so so now that you guys are married, and even this, you know, maybe you thought this even before, but talk to us about that, kind of alluded to it, but the sense of, like, did you ever feel this looming thought of, like, this has to work? Like, we have to make this work because otherwise our parents will say, I told you so. Because I feel like that's a common, you know, a stigma or thought that, like, crosses our parents' minds, where they think your marriage is not going to be successful if you don't marry within your culture.
Yeah. I mean, to some extent, I think all of us who choose to go outside of our culture have this, like, chip on our shoulder. And it's like that fuel that makes us have that added pressure of, like, it has to work. And yeah, to that, really what I have to say is, when you bring that person home, right? And I've always said this, is you're not fighting for that person. Like, because like you said, it might not work out, right? Like, things happen, life happens. Maybe you choose the wrong person. But what you're really fighting for is your autonomy, your ability to make decisions for yourself, to live life on your own terms, and to prove to your parents that you're perfectly capable of taking care of yourself. Because guess what? If things don't work out, are you going to move back to their house and let them start calling the shots again? Like, no, you're not going to do that.
Yeah.
So, like, it's great that you found this person. And so many of us, you know, think this is our forever person. And they probably will be. But that's not why you're putting up with all the bullshit.
Right. I remember 5 or 6 years ago, I went on this 2-week trip to India with my parents, and the whole trip was basically me tagging along to a bajillion people's houses every single day for 2 weeks. And, you know, of course, we're in India, so all these people and family members are badgering my parents with questions about, like, why I'm single, why I'm not married. And they're like, oh, come to our house, come meet our son, we know so-and-so. And of course, my parents are like, oh, yeah, like, they're totally on board. And I'm like, what, you know, no. And so I eventually told them that I was talking to someone more so to get them off my back. And I really was getting to know someone, but it was like not serious or had not gotten serious. But I just told them again because I wanted them to leave me alone. And he was a white guy, and I showed them a picture, and, you know, their first reaction was, oh, well, you know, if you don't marry an Indian person, they may not stay, as if things are guaranteed to stay intact if you're bound by your culture, which is a really flawed way of thinking, because there's like plenty of Indian people that are really shitty and destroy marriages because of their own behaviors. But, you know, that stigma is really common, unfortunately.
Yeah. And it's a trend, right? Like, people, like, at least in arranged marriages, and at least in our parents' generation, from what I've heard as I've gotten older, there's a lot of, like, hiding things, a lot of, like, not sharing all the information about a person. And it's like you're basically getting into an agreement with someone you barely know, and then you're like forcing yourself to make it work.
Yeah. I mean, silent divorce is a very real thing in our community.
Mm-hmm. And not so silent divorce. I love pulling that on my family.
Yeah. So what was meeting his family like?
So there was no real like formal introduction. Like I said, when we started dating, it was like so casual. And like a couple weeks in, Mike was like, oh, just like meet me at my house and we'll go. Like, I think we were going to New York or something. And he's like, just like come to my house and then like we'll take the train from there. And I was like, okay, but like, aren't your parents going to be home? And literally this kid goes, yeah, but I'm white. They don't care. And I'm like, okay. And so like, literally, I think I met his mom like in the driveway of his house, like a couple weeks in, and was like, oh yeah, this is Disha. Like, this is my mom. Like, we're going on a date now. Bye.
Mm-hmm. It's so different. It's so casual.
Yeah, super casual. And I was like a little stressed. I was like, yeah, but like, do you just like bring girls home like that? He's like, I'm a dude. They don't care what I do. I was like, all right, like, I'm going to believe you on this.
What is your relationship with your in-laws?
It's pretty good. I got to say, I can't complain. I always say that's like one of the few perks that comes with being in a interracial relationship when you're brown is like, I feel like the stereotype of like a nightmare mother-in-law is a very South Asian thing. Because they put all this pressure on their daughter-in-laws, like you have to be a certain way. But at least for me, and I know this isn't always the case, like I have like the most chill in-laws. Like I love Michael's family. They have never been anything less than kind to me. And even, you know, over the years, like we've had our disagreements. We have things we don't always, you know, see eye to eye on. But, you know, unlike a South Asian relationship with your parents where everything is conditional, right? Like if you don't meet these standards and we stop loving you and we disown you, like Mike's parents are the opposite of that. And it's taken me such a long time to get used to that because it's like we can disagree on something. We can even have an argument. And then, you know, you just talk it out like adults and then they let it go and they never bring it back up again. And you're waiting for the day you do something that makes them mad enough to like, you know, cut you out. But it's like, so you're always like waiting for that other shoe to drop, but like slowly coming to terms with like, no, like they see you as, you know, their son's wife and a part of this family. And they've even said, they're like, we're family. It doesn't matter what we argue about or disagree with, like you just get over it. But it's also strange being in a family where everyone treats each other like adults, right? Like no one's keeping secrets. No one's, you know, lying to keep the peace or pretending to be something they're not. Whereas in South Asian culture, there's so much of that. And so many of us, our parents always treated us like babies. And so we treat our parents like babies, like they can't handle anything, right? Like they, as if they don't have like emotional regulation skills. And so they can be like, you're going to be the reason I die. Or like, you're going to give me a heart attack. And they, you know, they literally have tantrums like they're children. And we entertain it because we were never treated like adults.
Right.
If you're in a room where everyone acts like an adult, we don't have that problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of emotional guilt tripping that happens in South Asian communities and lots of trauma and toxicity that just gets brushed under the rug.
Yeah, for sure.
So there was no like, you know, conflict or opposition from his side of the family. Like they pretty much welcomed you with open arms.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's great. When you got engaged, talk to us about the wedding planning. Like, how did you guys go about, you know, integrating your culture and his and what was that like?
I will say wedding planning was one of the harder parts of our relationship. Like, Mike and I, two of us together, have had very few issues. But wedding planning was just an absolute nightmare because, you know, to one extent, you're trying to explain cultural values to people who weren't raised with the same ones as yours, aka like brown people literally act like your wedding day is the most important day of your life, right? Like my parents have never been prouder of me than the day I got married. Even though I married a white guy, like Disha got married at 25, 26. They were like, this is it. She's doing it right, you know? And she's, you know, they're obviously, exactly. And you know, with American families, like, there's no pressure to get married. There's no, like, yes, you can have a nice wedding, but this idea of, like, a 3 or 4 day extravaganza and inviting all of these people and this whole to-do is very foreign to them. And as much as they were open and willing to engage in all of it, you know, when things come down to money and stuff and understanding, like, what costs can look like, just like, you know, that uncomfortable conversation between families of what things will cost and understanding that for the, at least for the Indian wedding, like, my parents were going to pick up a good chunk of it. Mike and I chipped in to pay for it. And Mike's parents also chipped in. But, you know, when you have his side of the family where there's only like 40 people invited and my side, which had like 150 or 200 people, like, you know, things are just going to be a little bit hectic. And then making my family understand, like, things like bridal parties, things like bridal showers, bachelorette parties, stuff like that was also really hard. So, you know, my mother-in-law really wanted to have a bridal shower. And so she threw that for me, even though typically your mom would do that for you in, like, a, you know, American quote unquote wedding. And so it was just like balancing all of that. And we got married at a time where, like, there were none of these, like, podcasts or Facebook groups or, like, anywhere where you could talk about, like, how do you do this? How do you balance all this? How do you share your cultures? Like, you know, we had to have Italian food at our wedding and Indian food. We had wedding programs that explain step by step a whole Hindu ceremony. All that kind of stuff.
Can you actually walk us through, like, what all the different events are in a traditional wedding? Because, like, so I'm from Kerala, and Kerala is predominantly Christian. So our weddings are more similar to traditional American weddings in that there's a church ceremony and a reception after, and that's, like, pretty much it. You know, there may be some, like, rituals and traditions, like the day before and the day after, that are just with the family. But for the most part, the big wedding event itself is a pretty standard one-day event.
So we had a traditional Hindu wedding. There's, you know what, it's hard to say traditional because over time, I think people have just, like, added and changed so much that actually has nothing to do with, like, religion. Like, a Sangeet is just like a party. Like, there's no religious significance. You're just adding an event in.
Is
Garba
the thing that both sides come together for, or is it, like, just groom's family?
So typically in an Indian wedding, the bride and groom side don't actually come together until the actual day of the wedding. Everything is separate. So first you have your henna or your mehndi ceremony, right? You get your henna done, you do the whole thing. Then there's usually a sangeet or a garba. I'm Gujarati, so there would have been a garba, which is, again, just dancing and stuff. Then you have your BT, which is like the turmeric, like the haldi ceremony, and which is like, and the santak. So that's all kind of combined. That's like the real start of an Indian wedding or like a Hindu wedding. And that's all religious ceremony stuff. And then you have the actual day of the wedding, reception at night, and usually the day after the bride's family has like a thing, and then the groom's family traditionally would have like a welcoming of the bride home ceremony.
We
combined everything.
Got it. Yeah, I've been to like one South Asian interracial wedding. So it was my Pakistani Muslim friend who married a white guy who grew up Catholic or Christian. So I remember at their various events, they had like cards placed at the different tables that explained what all the different, you know, Pakistani Islamic rituals and elements were so that people could learn and know what was going on, which I thought was like really nice touch. You know, you mentioned that you guys did that as well. So did you guys also have an American church ceremony as well?
So we had a very small, very intimate white dress wedding. And we actually had it 6 months before the Indian wedding. And it was really nice. It was literally in Michael's living room right before Christmas. And, you know, we always joke that we made micro weddings trendy before COVID, like the living room wedding.
Yeah.
My best friend got ordained online and she did the ceremony. And it was like the nearest and dearest, like 30 people, a lot of champagne, and a whole giant table of like charcuterie. And it was like 3 days before Christmas. And I had no shoes and a flower crown. We like wrote our vows on printer paper and got married. And that was really nice.
So when do you guys celebrate your anniversary?
We kind of celebrate both just for fun. You know, I feel like life is worth celebrating and we've been through enough crap that we're like, let's just like do both. We count, like if you count years, we count that like official December wedding. And then we got married 4th of July weekend. And so it's just like a night. We usually just like get the families together and throw like a pool party or something.
Okay. So I guess when did you guys get your marriage license? Because you have to apply for that within like a certain amount of time, right? Before the event.
Yeah. So that was the one in December.
Okay. The living room one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because what people don't know is a lot of Hindu priests actually aren't legally ordained to get someone legally married. So you have to have like a certificate. And so our Hindu priest straight up told us was like, yeah, so like this marriage license stuff, you have to do it at the courthouse because I'm not legally like able to do that. So it kind of worked out. And he did the ceremony in Sanskrit and English for our guests, which was nice, to make sure everybody understood everything, which honestly, a lot of our South Asian guests appreciated too, because most of us like don't understand Sanskrit anyway.
Yeah.
So like, you know, it was nice.
Was it difficult to find a priest who was willing to do an interracial marriage or wedding?
So I don't really know how to answer that question because my mom found our priest and he happens to be the priest at the temple my parents go to. So I think to some extent it was like he already knew my parents.
Yeah.
He did want to meet with Michael and I beforehand and like he like sat down with us and like had this whole discussion. And like, you know, if anything, I felt like he was more of about having an adult conversation with us about marriage than my parents were. Because he was like, how long have you known each other? How long have you been dating? Have you talked about things like kids and religion and like all of this? And, you know, we talked about it all with him. He's like, good. He's like, I'm glad you're making a well-rounded decision. Like you have thought the important things through. And I was like, wow, no one in my family has asked me any of these questions. Like,
yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Well, so speaking of kids, I'm sure you've gotten this question a lot, but how do you guys think about like raising religious with kids in the future if they are part of your future plans?
So the way I see it is like, you know, our kids will be Italian, Ukrainian, and Indian, right? We wouldn't expect them to pick which one they are. Like they're going to be biracial. So in the same sense, like we wouldn't make them pick a religion, right? It's not like you can only be one. You can be Hindu and you can be Catholic. And you can pick and choose whatever works for you on both ends. And ultimately, if you end up choosing one, that's fine. But there's no pressure to like, you can only be one, right? You're not just one culture. You don't have to be just one religion. And I think a lot of like religious ideologies will make you think that there's only like the one way and you have to pick our team and like this is some sort of sport, but like that's just not something Mike and I feel like pushing. So really the Hindu part is more of a culture thing, because so much of Indian culture for me at least is rooted in Hinduism, and same thing with like Catholicism. Like Mike doesn't go to church, but his parents go to church every Sunday. They do Christmas, they do Easter. Like I participate in all of those things and Mike participates in all of our Hindu holidays. And that's kind of how we intend to raise our kids too.
Yeah. Do you go to temple like regularly now as a married couple?
No, not really. Neither of us are like very religious. And I know that's like the stereotype of interracial couples where like, oh, you're not really religious. But I think you can make it work either way as long as you have the discussion with your partner.
Yeah.
As long as you're open to all of that. But I don't regularly go to temple. But, you know, we've both done both, right? Like I've been to church. I've sat through mass. He's been to temple. And like you do whatever is respectful to that culture. Like I don't go to church and take communion. because that would be disrespectful because I'm not a practicing Catholic. And, you know, Michael goes to the temple and washes his feet and, you know, does the thing that he's supposed to do.
Do you feel, do you ever feel like you've lost or will lose parts of your culture by marrying someone that's not Indian? Like, I guess, how do you think about, you know, quote, preserving your culture in the context of an interracial relationship?
So that's always the argument, right? Is you're throwing your culture away. You're, you know, you don't care about your culture because you married someone who's not brown. But the reality is, it doesn't matter who you marry. If you don't put the work in on the culture end, like, I know lots of brown people who married other brown people who now have children that don't speak the language.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, if anything, it's easier to lose the culture because you take it for granted when you're with someone who's just like you. Whereas for Mike and I, it's like it has to be a very like active and conscious decision to hang on to certain things. Nowadays, I think it's so much easier with all these brands popping up, creating things like children's books and toys and home decor that are very multifaceted and multicultural. And on the other hand, the way I see it is like, sure, we want to hold on to our culture, and that's great. But there's also a lot of our culture that I don't think we need to cling on to so tightly. And I don't think losing your culture is the worst thing you will do in this life, right? Like, there, even like, you know, with our podcasts here, where we talk about all these things, like me even having to talk about marrying someone who's not brown just shows how toxic parts of our culture are. Like, that it is such a tragic thing to say you married someone who's not brown. And it's like, I'm not going to hold on to that. I'm not going to hold on to all these biases that our families had towards people of other cultures and backgrounds. Like, God forbid you bring home someone who's black. Like, it's like somehow like its own category of interracial relationship, right? Like, I feel like white people are like the safe zone for brown folks to deal with, and they've like decided that they can kind of tolerate it, you know? And they're like, so there's so many things like that, or like not tolerating different religions, or thinking women should act or be a certain way. Like, part of that is also part of our culture, and I intend to lose that. Yeah. I intend to get rid of it. But then there's an active decision to hold on to the other parts, and hopefully that's what we will do.
Yeah. What do you think has been the most challenging part of the interracial element of your marriage?
I think sometimes it's hard to make someone understand how deeply ingrained the thought processes in our culture can be for us. You know, like, for me, like, there's all that like brown girl guilt that just seems to never go away, or, you know, anxiety over things like finances, or having a hard time making simple decisions because we were raised in a world where every decision we made held so much weight that just simple day-to-day decisions are so hard for us. Or like the anxiety that I live with because of the way I was raised, right? Like, when you have a secret boyfriend and you are constantly worried about what if somebody finds out? What if something goes wrong? What if I, you know, I lied to my parents, I'm going away this weekend with my boyfriend. What if something happens? I have no one to call. And now I have anxiety over travel because for so long, even when I traveled, I was stressed out the entire time because I thought, if something happens, I have nobody to call. And explaining that kind of stuff,
yeah,
is hard with someone who didn't grow up like that. And sometimes it's as simple as Michael needing to call me out on it. Like, I have a lot of anxiety over spending money because I haven't taken money from my parents really since I was 17. Like, I put myself through school. I paid my bills. I helped pay for my wedding. And like, yes, I had some occasional financial support, but like, anything I wanted to do, I paid for myself, and I never spend money on anything. Like, to this day, I am like the queen of clearance section shopping. Whereas literally one time Michael had to be like, you need to stop looking at every purchase as a need. You don't have to need things. Like, you can just want them. You can just get something because it's something that you want. Like, you don't even have to justify it. He's like, stop having to justify everything. And that was the first time I even thought about money like that, right? And so it was silly things like getting my nails done, like Mike has to like encourage me to do because in my head it's frivolous.
Yeah.
And it's unnecessary and you don't need to do it. But every 3 weeks he'll be like, are you going to get your nails done? And I'm like, oh, well, like I have nowhere to go this weekend. Like there's no reason to. He's like, just do it because you like getting your nails done. You don't need a reason. Just get your nails done.
Yeah.
And I've been doing that. I like for like a year or two, I went like constantly to get my nails done, or I would buy coffee, like as simple as like a $3 cup of coffee being like, I don't need to justify buying this. I don't need to have a busy day or a lot of work to do. I can just buy the coffee.
Yeah.
And so explaining stuff like that is probably the hardest part, is like that mindset we have.
What do you think being in an interracial relationship has taught you?
I think it's really taught me that you have the ability to like make your own decisions and that like you're going to be okay, like talking to myself. Because for a long time, I think when you're a brown girl, you're just taught that like without your parents, you will fall apart. And then without your husband, you will fall apart. And someone else has to always make the decisions for you. And when you, you know, kind of get in the driver's seat and start calling the shots, you are now responsible, not just for your successes, but also your failures. But knowing that you can pick yourself up from those failures or those mistakes and be okay. Like making a mistake is not a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, it's okay. You can just get back up and keep going. And like, ultimately, like if you want your life to be a certain way, you have to actively take the steps to create it and not let other people decide what your life will look like. Because if you do, like, that price will be paid.
Yes.
Right? Like, you will pay for that eventually. You can pay now by getting in that driver's seat and calling the shots, or you can be a resentful, angry 45-year-old who's pissed at the world that their life doesn't look a certain way because they've never had to make their own decisions. And someone else built their life for them. So like, that's probably what it's taught me, is like, I'm capable of doing whatever I set my mind to. And I'm okay with my decisions, no matter how they turn out.
Yeah, I love that. I think, you know, one of the most regrettable things that can happen is losing yourself to satisfy other people or satisfy your family. And yeah, it's, you know, it can be devastating when your parents aren't fully supportive of whatever it is, your relationship or what you decided to study or your life choices. But, you know, settling to make other people happy or satisfy other people is going to catch up to you. Like, it's going to catch up to you and smack you in the face one day.
It will. Absolutely.
What are some resources that you would suggest for people in interracial relationships?
So nowadays, I feel like there's so many, right? So there's the Facebook group SAWIR. It's SAWIR. That stands for South Asian Women in Interracial Relationships. So if you are one of those women, feel free to join. It is a private group, so you have to like go through some questions, but they are incredible. There's thousands of women in there. So if you ever feel alone, that's a good place to start. And that's also why I created my podcast, so that that can be a resource.
Yeah. Speaking of your podcast, But What Will People Say, you know, obviously, like, you were influenced by your own experience of going through interracial dating and marriage. But I'm curious, what was that turning point where you felt like, I need to start a podcast to talk about this?
I've always been a bit of a like podcast nerd. Like, I listen to podcasts constantly. And for all the content that I myself produce these days, I consume 10 times more of it. I'm constantly listening to podcasts. And so eventually I was like, I can do that. Like, I can talk. I'm good at that. It's actually not that easy. But, you know, we've honed that skill. And I think part of it was selfish. Part of me was, when I was going through all of this, I had no one to talk to. I had no one who can relate. I had nobody who had been through it. And it was exhausting to constantly explain myself to my girlfriends, who most of them are not brown and, you know, haven't been through that. And so part of it was selfish. I was like, I want to connect with other women like that. the other part was through online groups like Sawir, I realized like everyone has a story that is very different. Like the watered down version is secret boyfriend, parents flip out, parents get over it, wedding. And then the story ends, right? You got married, you got what you wanted. Like, no, there's a whole life to be built after that. And everyone's story is different based on your background and your religion. And like the South Asian culture is so diverse that everyone has their own good and bad and ugly to their story. And then the life you built after that, right? Like no one talks about like, what are challenges you face when you married? How do you raise kids? What are tools you can use to incorporate your culture into your home? Like no one talks about that stuff, and no one was doing it back then. There were so few brown girl podcasts a few years ago when I started my show, and I was like, sure. And my husband went and bought a bunch of stuff for podcasting because, again, like me not spending money was never going to do it. So he just went ahead and bought it and was like, well, I spent all this money on it. Now you have to use it. He almost like reverse psychologied his way into my head about it. I was like, oh, now I have to like do something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of how the show started.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I think we hear like the term representation often. It is really important because, you know, having other people that they can look up to who have done it themselves or who are going through, you know, something similar makes them feel less alone and increases their own confidence and self-esteem to be able to, you know, pursue or overcome whatever hurdle they have in front of them. So I have been listening to your podcast for the last like six or eight months ago is probably when I discovered it. And it's an awesome podcast. And I'll be sure to leave the link in the show notes. Last question. What advice do you have for others who may be in interracial relationships now and struggling with breaking the news to their family?
I think have more faith in yourself. Like, you are not a bad person. You're a person doing a regular thing called dating, and you are perfectly capable. Like, you were raised by immigrant parents who, you know, yeah, we talk about all like the negatives that come with being an immigrant, but there's also the positives, right? Like, we are incredibly good under pressure. We are gritty. We are resilient. Most of us don't even know how to quit, and we're probably the hardest working person in the room. All of that is in you, and you weren't raised to just make silly offhanded decisions. You didn't just like bring home some rando off the street. Like, you have probably thought about more than most people who choose to get married. So have faith in yourself. Trust that you are not a bad person. Don't let the like guilt take over. And the only way to the other side is through. So you just got to put one foot in front of the other and just keep on going, and you will come out on the other side. And like, there's this quote that it's like, your greatest life exists on the other side of your greatest fears. Like, that's what it is. Because once you get over that hurdle, once you start, you know, living unapologetically, that's like the tagline of my show, like, you will never go back. You will never, ever go back to being that person who was living this double life, who was hiding all of these parts of themselves, who was trying to fit puzzle piece themselves into someone else's world. Like, you will just be yourself, and it will always be worth it.
Yeah, I love it. Well, Disha, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. I know that your story will inspire so many other people who are in similar situations. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me. It was so much fun.
Yep.